Okay.
I emailed you the deck, so.
Oh, you emailed me the deck?
Yeah.
So let me see if I can pop it up real quick.
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't show everybody your email, mate. Might be embarrassing for everybody.
Yeah, no signing Carl up for anything if you know my email address. I don't want to buy pizza and or get other offers.
I should turn my phone off in case my daughter's calling me.
Oh, yeah. Make sure you silence some cell phones. We got this missile in the back. It's locked onto beeping sounds and songs, these kind of things. Yeah.
I'm in trouble.
What'd you do?
No, just my daughter's a band called me in the middle of this.
Of course. Okay, here we go. Everybody. Can I just open it directly? I should be able to.
Yeah,
just.
That should work.
Okay, you don't have any viruses on here, right?
I hope not.
All right. I know Marco probably slipped one in for us. He's going to. Hi. Hello from Marco. Okay.
How do that was good.
Just press button, right?
Yeah. Oh, I need one of these things on. Doesn't it?
How do I do this?
What F5.
Oh, F5? Okay.
It's like God intended.
Okay. And I'll press
okay.
Button.
Oh, that works.
Cool. Can everybody hear me okay? Is this actually coming up? Can you hear me? Jambo, you, Sam, you're nodding? Yeah, okay, cool. So my name's Mark Bolter. I'm a program manager on the WPF and Silverlight designers. I've been working on designers. I actually found a spec for the Windows Forms designer from 1999 on my machine when I was searching for something the other night. So I've been working on this stuff for a while. Carl is also a PM on my team, and then Marco is a dev lead on my team, and there's Sam and Jambo at the back there, who are from my QA team, and Ben is here somewhere, but he popped out to get a soda, I think. So between us, I'm fat and happy middle management, but between the rest of the guys, I'll probably be able to answer your hard technical questions. So we've got a lot of stuff to cover, so I'm going to whip through this quickly. I'm going to talk very briefly about what's new in VS 2010 from an extensibility point of view. There's lots of exciting stuff we've done from an end-user features point of view and some interesting stuff we've done from an extensibility point of view. Then Carl's going to spend the majority of this talk talking about building a shared design time for a WPF and Silverlight control and how you can go about building a single design time that targets both the WPF and the Silverlight versions of your controls, how you structure that, those kind of things. And then we've got an FAQ at the end, which I'm going to whip through. And but it'll be in the slides, and I'll make sure you guys have access to the slides so you have the data there. I'm going to talk about how you make your get your VS 2008 and VS 10 design times running side by side. I'm going to talk about the improvements we've made around installing controls to the toolbox, and then I'm going to talk about breaking changes that we've had to make from 2008, and that's your chance to beat us up for being lame. So the new stuff we've done for VS 10, the kind of big thing from our point of view is we actually have an interactive designer for Silverlight 3, and we support building rich design times for your Silverlight 3 controls. We're pretty excited about that. As I mentioned, we also have a model that allows you, if you have WPF and a Silverlight version of your control with a similar API set, you can actually build a single design time for those two controls, so you don't have to duplicate code. You can just use a single code base for that. We've also done a chunk of work to share more across Blend and Cider, and Uni's doing a talk on extensibility in Blend in the next hour. I highly recommend that, but we've gone beyond the property browser in Blend 3 and VS 10, so the model, menu actions, adorners, all these features we have on the design surface itself, you can now access from Blend as well. We've also made the way you specify icons for the toolbox the same across both products, which makes life a lot easier. We've made it orders of magnitude easier to get your controls onto the toolbox. In the past, this was not the most pleasant experience, and we've done a stack of work there to make it very simple to add your controls to the toolbox to specify the icon, what tab they go in, that kind of thing. We've also extended the property editing API, so the property browser in VS 2008 had an extensibility model, but it was fairly limited because it was something we wanted to share across Blend 2 and VS 2008. We've opened that up in Blend 3 and VS 10, so you now have access to the full range of our API from inside the property browser. And as I mentioned previously, we've also done work to allow you to install design times for VS 2008 and VS 10 side by side on the same machine. So that's a quick summary of the new stuff we've done in VS 10. I'm now going to hand over to Carl, who's going to talk about building design times for VS 10 for WPF and Silverlight controls.
Okay, thanks, Mark. So what we're going to talk about here, I'm going to start off with a slide deck to get people oriented as to what's going on, and then I can show you some, we have some demoware to show. All right, so in this, for this presentation, we have this fictitious company called Cider Controls. So wherever you see the name Cider Controls in our namespaces or in our assembly names, you could just replace that with your company name, all right? So that's name of our company, Cider Controls. Okay. Now, what I want to do first is I want to show you a few things you can do. I'm going to give you some demo, a little bit of a preview of the things that we can do, and then we'll get into how we do it. So what kind of experiences can you deliver today with the tool set that we're going to give you? So you can deliver menu actions. This is where you can put menus on controls, and then they can do in your, when users click on the menu option, it can go execute some code. You can put adorners for moving, for there can you have, well, adorners can do many, many things. So just depending on how you want to implement them, what you'll see here today is a little editor that I'm going to pop up in an adorner. We'll show you how to do inline value editors in the property grid, show you how to do category editors in the property grid. So I've got these two tools that I recently wrote. I'll give you a quick demo of these. So, okay, let's go over here. All right, all of this code here is going to be available on my blog, and it'll be available later this week. We didn't post anything here because of... Or I'm sorry, we don't have a way to like give you any code right now. So at the end of the presentation, I'll show you the URL where you'll go and you can get all the code and all the slides and all the demos and everything you're going to see. By the way, who speaks VB here besides me? Okay, so good. We got a couple of people. So the designer code that I will give you will be written in VB. I'm actually a VB person. The stuff I'm going to show you. I actually started learning C# last week, and I wrote all the code in C#, but the stuff that I'll deliver will have a VB version of all the design stuff for the VB developers here. Okay, so what we have here, and sorry for this being so small and me not being prepared, that's my bad. All right, so what I have here is I have a Visual Studio 2010, and I have a grid. And so one of the things that I, one of the applications that will be available on my blog is you can right-click, and you're going to see this grid tools thing here. Well, this is what these are called menu actions. So what I did is I extended Visual Studio. I actually extended the grid control, put a design experience for it, and I'm going to give you a way to lay it out. So what happens is it comes up, and it gives you this nice little box. And what this is an abstract view of the grid that you've selected. Now, the purpose of this is so that you can select rows and you can move them up and down. So watch what I just did. See how the combo box moved up to the top there? And if I want to, I can move it back. I can move two at a time. See, I can double or click shift click, and I can move two of them up. And you can see how that moved right there. So this is a really easy way. For those of you who worked in WPF, you know moving grid stuff is just, you know, you have to sit there and play with the XAML. It's a real pain. If you want to insert, let's say you want to put another column, so you can right-click and say column, insert after, and it puts another column there, and you can see on the design surface it's added it right there. If you want to change all your sizes, if you want to just change one, let's say you wanted to just change this, well, you can come over here, and it has this little in-place editor, and then you press enter to commit, and then we'll come over here, we'll do the same, and we'll just commit that. So you can see that now we have proportionally spaced two rows equal, and then we got a 50 at the end. I'm sorry, columns and at the end. So I could commit that, or I can hit cancel to save to split it back. I also have this thing called the chainsaw. You can come over here, and in this particular version, leaves alignments. If you click on it, it gives you a box telling you, letting you know, do you really want to do it? And what it did, it just went and acted on all the controls. So all I did is I have a menu action that now works with the thing called the model, And I know that most of you here have never written any designer for WPF. I understand that. By the way, Mark, I had everybody raise their hand. Most of the audience, we have two people here that have done it. Everybody else is kind of new for them. So there's an object model that we surface to you in our extensibility platform, and it allows you to work with any of the elements on the design surface. So all I did here was I added a menu action, and then I went and I modified what was on the design surface, and you can see it's a nice little tool to help you do things, right? All right, so that's one thing here, and this whole thing will be, by the way, this is all written in VB. I wrote it 2 weeks ago. That was my first extensibility project, by the way, so to show you how easy this is. So you can understand that this is a lot of fun and it's not that difficult. All right, so under projects here, I have one more that I could show you here, and this will be my test bench. All right, so this test bench, what this is going to test is this particular project is going to show you it's a WPF and Silverlight control that this class is about. So let's take a look at the WPF control first. So I have a project that has WPF, and here's my designer. And so this is a custom control that Mark and I put together to try to demonstrate and show the capabilities of our designer. I'm going to just scoot that out of the way real quick. So we have I have a control that's really that you could easily see that could be used in both a WPF project and a Silverlight project. So we have this thing called the rating control, right? And so the idea of the rating control is that when at runtime, you could show this, your customers can enter some information, and they could come over here and they could select the value, how much they want to vote, and they could submit it, right? All right, so let's talk about the design experience first. So I can select it, and you'll notice, the first thing you probably noticed when I clicked on here is that I got this adorner down here. So what I can do is I can actually change the value inside my adorner, right? Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to come over here and show you this. All right, bring this up. I'm going to expose this. When I talked about a category editor, maybe that didn't click. So over here in the properties window, you can have, if you click over here on this A to Z, it gives you an alpha view. So if I was to come over here and I type the word value, I could see that my value, see how my value is right here? And I could change it. You notice it's changing on the adorner and on the control itself. I could right click here on this thing. It's called the property marker, and I can reset it. And I'll show you how to program all this. Your extensibility can do everything that I'm doing. It's very, very simple. All right, you can come over here, you can click, and you can set it. All right, so we also have this thing called the category editor. So what we can do is, we click on the category editor, I have this category called custom. And so what I did is I wrote this little category editor, and you can see that it's got all the properties here, so we can change that top thing from customer maintenance to customer demo. And press enter, and we can see that it changes the title, and we can see how that works, and you can click here, and I mean, it all just works really easy. All right, so that's what I just showed you here was a category editor. I showed you how you can surface an adorner, and you can put a value control. And by the way, this control that's sitting right here is the same control that's actually embedded in here, and it's the same control that's actually embedded in here. I'm just reusing the control. So what about menu actions, Carl? Well, if you right-click on the control, and you can see feedback set value. So I have this little menu up here, and I can click, and I can change my value. So it allows me to do all kinds of stuff right at design time. So we're going to show you today is how to surface all of these design experiences for your controls. Right? Now, something else that you get free. In Visual Studio 2010, Beta 2, we have a rich data binding experience, and the data story is one of the focuses of my team for the last year. And so we actually have a celebrity with us, Ben, who wrote the data binding picker. He's going to shoot me later today. So he wrote the data binding picker, and what's really cool, what I'm about to show you, is that you're going to be able to get all the rich functionality that Visual Studio has for its own controls on the property marker in your own apps. Well, what do you mean by that, Carl? Well, if you come over here, and you can see where we have the comment heading, and that says, please enter. Well, watch what I can do here. I can actually right-click, and I can say reset value. Now, this is not visual. So this is not some custom control that Microsoft shipped. This is Carl's control. But look, so watch what I can do. I can apply a data binding. And I didn't write, you know how many lines of code I had to write to get this? One. It's a single line of code. You get all this functionality for free. So notice what happened when I clicked on binding. Well, a couple things happened. Notice here that the property now, where the editor was, it changed it to binding. So that way the user, or so the developer who's consuming your controls knows that this control is data bound. so that they wouldn't try to go in there and type and set it, right? All right, then we have the little data binding icon. Well, watch what I can do here. I'm going to data bind to the grid. So watch this. Relative source, find ancestor. Oh, let's see. What kind is that? All right, what I need is a grid. And I'm going to come over here, click on my path. Now I can come down here. So I can set my binding now. So some of you who don't like to type bindings, I'm just going to click on the tag property. And I'll just click away to commit. Now, notice the text changed high from the grid. Oh, that's pretty cool. I didn't have to write any code for that. So what I did, see, I kind of cheated a little bit, is over here for the grid, what I have is I set the tag property earlier today to say high from the grid. So what I was trying to show you is that when you go to write value editors for your controls, you're going to get all this functionality for free. All you have to do is follow some simple design patterns that we will teach you, and your controls can do the same exact thing. All right, and the other thing this control is, it's one of those, I wrote it so that you could extend it a little bit. So down here, the header part takes a type of object. So it can either take a string, like you can see here, or it can take an object. In this case, you can put some complex XAML in there. You can put images or hyperlinks, whatever you want, right? All right, so that's cool. We showed you that part. Any other question about that before I dive right into the meat? Okay, all right. All right, so let's talk about it. Now, unfortunately, we have to go back to the slide deck. So I think I have to press Control F5. I'm always challenged with this PowerPoint. This is only my second PowerPoint. I don't like PowerPoint. It masters me somehow. All right, so what is the goal of this class? All right, the goal of this class is one goal, which is to provide you an understanding for the requirements for developing a single design time for a Silverlight control and a WPF control. So this way you don't have to write two designers for the same control. All right, so our scenario is we have an assembly called CIDR Controls, member CIDR Controls, that's our vendor name, .WPF, .Silverlight, so here's our two control assemblies, and then we have the CIDR Controls Common Visual Studio Design.dll. All right? That's what we want. That's our goal. I just want to have one design assembly. All right, so how do we do this? All right, so what we need to talk about first is naming conventions. And this is how Visual Studio and Blend find your assemblies, okay, and my assemblies. All right, so in this scenario, our custom control library is CIDR controls.dll. In other words, I didn't update this slide for WPF or Silverlight, right? Everybody can see that. So right now, we're trying to keep it simple. So we have an assembly called CIDR controls.dll. Our design DLL, if it was called CIDR controls.design.dll, that would work for both Visual Studio and Blend. Both Visual Studio and Blend will load that file. They'll actually look for it, look for some metadata, and load it. All right? Now, the next way to name your assemblies is CIDR controls.visualstudio.design.dll. And in this case, only Visual Studio will look for that assembly and load its metadata and subsequently load its code up. And the last one, we have CIDR controls expression.design, and this is where only Blend will load, so VS won't look at that code. And Uni, like we talked about earlier, Uni's going to be doing a demonstration. His class is next in the other room, and he'll talk about that a lot. All right, now we got to talk about one other thing, which is deployment locations. In other words, how does Visual Studio and how does Blend locate your well-named assembly that we just talked about? All right, so what happens is you have two options available to you, all right? The first one is where you can have your control and your control designer deployed in the same folder, and that will load just fine. Or you can put your control in a folder, and then in a subfolder called design, you can put all your design DLL can go in there. And for this demo, that's how I've chosen to do it, because my design, I have a whole bunch of DLLs, and I didn't want to junk up the one folder, so I have all my design in one spot. And so I've chosen to use this design metaphor here. That's how this class is doing it. Okay. All right, so again, here's our scenario. Our exact scenario today is that we have two sets of controls and one designer. So I have a WPF control, right? It's my feedback control and my rating control, and that's in a DLL called CIDR controls.wpf.dll. For my Silverlight, I've got Cider Controls, that Silverlight DLL, and for my common, for my design DLL, it's called Cider Controls Common Visual Studio .design.dll. Now, we see a problem here, don't we? Because those names don't match the names that I just told you it has to be in order for things to load. All right, we're going to talk about that. The very first thing that you have to understand is when Visual Studio or Blend is actually looking for files, it's actually looking to do one thing. Initially, all it wants to do is load metadata. That's all it really wants to do. It doesn't want to load your control. It doesn't want, all it needs and wants is metadata. So what we're going to do, that well-named DLL, its only purpose is to provide metadata. Once it's provided metadata, then you can load any assembly you want. And that's how we get around this problem. So let's take a look at this. So if we take a close look here, we've got our WPF design time right here. I'm sorry, we have our WPF controls library. But inside there or underneath where that DLL is deployed, there is a design folder. In the design folder, that's where I put Cider Controls.WPF Visual Studio Design. You're going to notice that top DLL, the way it's a really long name, it matches the correct naming conventions for Visual Studio to load that file, doesn't it? That metadata will be loaded out of that file. Now, what it does is that DLL calls into the common DLL. And now that's where all the work gets done. But we needed a well-known location that followed all the rules. So we have this little shim file, if you will, that does this. And that will actually load your metadata. Now, there's one other thing you have to do with reference to the Cider Controls WPF Visual Studio Design. With that assembly, in your build actions, in your build events, everybody, who doesn't know what a build event is? It's okay. Okay, thank you for being honest. So in Visual Studio, in the Properties pane on your Compile tab, there's a Compile tab, there's a couple of boxes there that hardly anybody ever has to put anything in, but one of them is called Post Build Events. And so what has to happen is we actually need to copy all of the output from your design assemblies. That actually has to be copied into a subfolder of where your control assembly is actually sitting, right? Because the rule is, in order for the design assemblies to load, is you have your control designer DLL here, and in the design subfolder, in its tree, all the design stuff has to be here. So in order to get that to happen, when you're building your application, you know, you're debugging and checking everything, you need to copy this stuff from the one project down here, which is your design project, copy its output up to where your control is, right? Now, I have some other pictures to show you that. So right here, I'll show you this little script I wrote, and I use Xcopy because it guarantees that if the folder's there, it puts it there. If it's not there, it creates it and puts it there. It overwrites it, blah, 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 right? So that's how you do it. It's actually very easy to do. All right. Now, let's take a look at what's happening here. So what I have here to give you a better picture is in the first slide at the top, we can see the Cider Controls.WPF DLL. This is the output folder from the assembly where the custom control actually is, right? Because that's our custom control. That's where feedback and rating live. So what we do is, like I said, whenever the WPF or Cider Controls WPF Visual Studio Design DLL, whenever that builds, it's going to run that script I showed you, and it's going to copy all of its output. Once it's created it, it's going to copy into a subfolder underneath the control, and it puts all the assemblies that it needs. And now, when you reference that Cider Controls WPF DLL, when you reference that and you drag one of its controls onto your design surface, Visual Studio looks in the design folder and says, oh, wait a minute, I need to find a metadata file. See, all it cares about first, step one, metadata. So metadata is right here, Cider Controls WPF, Visual Studio Design DLL, presto. Visual Studio now goes into action, loads up all your metadata, and now you have a happy design experience. All right? Anybody got a question about this? This is the hardest part of the rest of the day, trust me. Anybody? Okay. All right, so now, it's the same exact thing for the Silverlight experience, except we just have one little thing here. So for the Cider Control Silverlight, for that assembly, It has to, under its design folder, or in its design subfolder, we have to copy, or this stuff will be here, and it, you're going to do the same thing. It loads from common, same common. So now we got Silverlight and WPF referencing the same designer DLL. And right here, we do the X copy thing, and it copies it to the other folder. I'm going to come over here, take a look at here. And so what do we have? At the top, we've got our CIDR control Silverlight DLL. That's the DLL that lets Silverlight design our feedback control, right? And underneath, or I'm sorry, in its debug folder, underneath there, there's a design folder, and its metadata file is right here. So you can see all these other files are the same files for both WPF and Silverlight. This is really cool stuff. The only difference is the metadata, because we have to load different kind of types, different platforms, actually. All right. So now let's talk about this common DLL for just a minute. So this is the CIDR Control's common Visual Studio design DLL. All right, this DLL references the WPF controls. It does that for two reasons. One is because it has to know what types are in there, and two, because it actually uses the rating control in its design experience, doesn't it? So that little control that we had that allowed you to hover your mouse over and select the value is actually a control exposed by the WPF controls library. And it's also, not only is it consumed by customers on and when they use the feedback control or the rating control by itself, but it's also consumed by Visual Studio in the design experience. All right. Now, there's another reference, and this is a little bit, you have to, this is a little bit tricky also, this next piece. We have an assembly called CIDR Control Silverlight Visual Studio Design Types. Now, that assembly doesn't match anything, and it actually doesn't get loaded by any of the magic. What it does do, though, is it provides a way for us as control developer, as control design developers, to reference a Silverlight type without actually loading Silverlight into our namespace. All right? So I'm going to say this a couple of times, and it took me a couple of days for this like to sink in, because Mark was explaining this to me, and I'm like, what? You know? so don't feel bad. Trust me. I've spent a lot of time learning this, or just getting this through my head. So up here, we have an assembly, and its only job is to actually reference Silverlight. You can see that it references Silverlight controls, and you can guarantee that DLL is a Silverlight class library, right? So that's referencing all of Silverlight. But what we need inside our control designer is we need a reference to, or we need to know the exact type of control that you want to design. What do you mean by that? If you take a silver, when you go into Silverlight and you drag and drop a feedback control on the design surface, Visual Studio wants to know what type that is. And that's where this metadata comes in, we're about to look at. It's going to ask, and it's looking for, I need to know the metadata for this type. So it knows that that's a Silverlight control. Now, even though it's not a Silverlight control on the screen, we won't worry about the inner working details, but just know that it knows that that's actually a Silverlight control there. And so when it goes looking for metadata, it's actually looking for a Silverlight control, not just some string name, but it's looking for a real Silverlight control. So what we do is we expose these types as read-only properties, and because we don't actually load this file as a project reference, we load it as a file reference, we can actually get back those types by referencing those static members, but without having to load all of Silverlight in the same place with WPF, because you know that the names would be completely confusing, right? Because now the other way you could do this is you could load those in, and then you have to reference them, and it gets a little bit harder. This workaround is much easier. All right, so when you see this in action, you understand exactly what I'm talking about.
Carl, do you mind if I just add?
Yes, please.
Okay, sorry. Just one of the reasons we have the separate assembly with the Silverlight types is, although in C# and VB you can disambiguate type names right down to the assembly, so you could create an alias for the Silverlight types that was distinct from the alias for the WPF types. The XAML compiler doesn't support that, so if you add references to Silverlight and WPF types into a single project, the XAML compiler gets horribly confused. And so because we want to write our UI in XAML, and using WPF for our design time. We put the Silverlight types into that separate assembly, and therefore we don't have a direct reference to any Silverlight types, and the XAML compiler doesn't get confused. The other point to note that I realised, as I should have pointed out to Carl earlier when I was reviewing the deck, is that the key point here is that for both WPF and Silverlight, you write your design time in WPF. So even when you're writing your design time for your Silverlight controls, you're actually writing that in WPF. The control on the surface that renders is your Silverlight control, but then everything above it, the adorners, the widgets you interact with on the designer, the widgets in the property browser, all of the menu actions, all of those things are actually written in WPF. And so that's the other reason for having the Silverlight types in a separate assembly, is that you can keep that isolated from all of your design time code, which you're writing in WPF.
Okay, so let's talk about, or let's actually follow what happens when we want to try to load up the WPF designer. Let's start with the easy one first. So what we have here is, remember, this is the assembly here. So that's my control assembly, which we don't even look at today. We don't need to. What we want to do is we want to look at the CIDR Controls WPF Visual Studio Design Assembly. Because remember, this is the assembly that's well-named and it's in a well-known location. Visual Studio is going to be looking for this file. And once it finds the file, it's going to be looking for this attribute. So it's going to be looking for this provide metadata attribute. And what we do is, you could put this in assemblyinfo.cs, but Mark and I like to put the attribute here because it just makes it easier, all the codes in one place. So what's happening here is this attribute tells what type to load to get the metadata, because that's what Visual Studio is looking for. It's looking for metadata. So we have this register WPF metadata class right here, and here it is. Here's one of the biggest changes from Visual. Who's done Visual Studio 2008 extension? Okay, so you guys are used to seeing iRegister metadata. That's the interface that you're used to seeing. It's now been changed to iProvide attribute table. So Mark will talk about what's broken, but that's right there is one of the biggest changes right there. All right. Also, when you go and you go look at the docs, even the beta 2 docs, unfortunately, the beta 2 docs, a lot of them don't show iProvide attribute table. I just checked this morning when they, you know, from yesterday when they brought all this stuff up. So iProvide, you'll see iRegister metadata. So when you see iRegister metadata, just erase that, translate it to this, and you're going to be happy. Then the rest of the example will work for you. Okay. Now there are examples. I'll show you the where the entry is or where the website is for that. There's a whole set of extensibility examples, real simple ones that just, you know, WPF, WPF, and that's it. So it's very, very simple where all of this kind of information is available, and it uses all the new code, and all the examples are correct. All right, that's in the WPF extensibility examples, and I can show you where those are. All right, so what happens is this gets called by the designer, and all it's looking to do is to get an attribute table. This is all it wants to do. So remember, it's now looking for a WPF, right? Because this is in the underneath the WPF control tree. And so what we do, it's looking for this attribute table, and we're going to return this back. And the way that we're going to disambiguate between Silverlight and WPF is I have this parameter here, which provides a type resolver. So this way, I can use one attribute table for both WPF and Silverlight. So what you're seeing right now is the only WPF-specific code, and there's a corresponding file for this, for Silverlight. Once you leave this space, you're all in sort of the designer mode, which is platform neutral, which is very cool, actually. All right, so now we'll go to step two. Step two is that we have this class here, which is our CIDR Controls Attribute Table Builder, and the job of this is to return back the metadata that Visual Studio needs so it knows what adorners to load, what menu actions to load, what should the property browser do in response to what you want, right? These are the kind of questions that this particular class is going to be answering. You're going to notice that up here at module level, I have this registration type resolver, all right? So what this is an abstract class so that we can have both WPF and Silverlight. I'll show you this right here. And there's a folder that I have here called registration. And you'll see that right here, I have this abstract class here, right here. That's not inherit for the VB people. So we have this abstract class here that's going to return back a type resolver. And so I have the WPF one and I have a Silverlight one. All right. So very, very simple kind of switch going on here. All right. I'll go back over here. I don't want to get lost here. All right. So in here, control shift enter, view. There we go. Is that better now? Yeah, probably a lot better. All right, so in this attribute table builder, it's actually very simple. What's going to happen in the constructor, we're going to pass back, we're going to pass in the type of resolver that we're going to use, either WPF or Silverlight. Because remember, at this point, we're platform neutral, but for the next couple of questions that Visual Studio is going to be asking our DLL, we have to give platform-specific answers. And so the way that we do this in a platform-neutral way without having to repeat the same code in both DLLs is we use this resolver. We inject the resolver into the constructor. Now it makes it very easy to go ahead and handle this. So right here, inside our constructor, we're going to add the feedback control attributes. Let's say that you were supporting 10 controls, then you would have 10 methods here listed, one method for each of your controls that you're providing a design time for. All right, here's how we register stuff. Actually, very simple. Now, when you see these add type attributes and add category and add member attributes, what I did is I have this little helper functions down here that do it. It just makes typing the code a little bit easier than otherwise you have all the delegates kind of wrapped up and everything. It's just simpler to do it this way. All right. So all we're going to do is we're going to take our, right here, we have our registration type resolver. So what this is going to return back, it's going to either give me back a real Silverlight type or a real WPF type. Because this is what Visual Studio is asking. It's comparing real to real, all right? Real types to real types. So what's happening is here, once it says, I'm going to add here, I'm going to add an attribute for this type. So down here, you're going to see where this gets consumed. Right here, this type, that's that really long type resolver name. It actually gets passed in. So there's this callback that gets added, and the exact type gets passed. And then here, you're just adding the attributes, all right? So let's see what kind of attributes you can add. And I'll take you through this other thing in just 1 second. So we have this feature attribute. Everything's, when you add stuff to your item, you're adding these features. One's called this particular feature allows you to have a context menu. So here, we're going to register that we would like to have a context menu with our control. Here, we would like to add an adorner to our control. That's how you add an adorner, just a little bit of metadata. Down here, category editor. You want to have a category editor? No problem. So again, we're going to provide our platform neutral type, but actually it's platform specific type, even though we're in platform neutral code. And then we're just going to tell it what kind of, what's the type of our editor. And that's all it takes. And your editor will get loaded automatically. So down here, here's where we can do things like adding the category attribute. So I have a corner radius property that I added, and corner radius comes up in common, same place for the border. Here I have a header property, and I'm adding it, I'm putting it into custom. And here, I'm adding a type converter, all right? So when you have, remember header, that was the property that had a name, said like customer maintenance, then the next one over was blue, and it had that little, cider or I forget whatever I put in there. Well, that was a type of object. So in order to get, in order for the property, the properties window to work with object, and if you just want to type a simple string in, you have to go ahead and provide a type converter attribute so that if a user goes and they type something in your property and it's a type of object and they're typing a string, this will automatically convert it for you. If they don't type a string, then it doesn't do anything, right? So they're allowed, the XAML can have an object, and of course you wouldn't type anything in the properties window, but if in the properties window you type something, presto, it gets turned into a string for you. And this is how you do that. All right, so the rest of these here, these are just property editor attributes. All right, one other one's different. So you remember in value, whenever we're going to show the value for the control, is we had that little rating control where you could move your mouse back and forth, you get the little green dots or black dots. So right here, here's what I did. In order to get that to show up, I had to go ahead and register metadata and tell Visual Studio, hey, whenever you edit my value property, what I want you to do is I want you to use this property editor right here, this type, I want you to use that. I want you to use my rating selector control, right? And that's all I had to do to get Visual Studio to say, oh, fine, I'm going to use that, all right? And the rest of these two are just some custom, I'm just applying attributes and of what category that they belong to. All right, so let's take a look at real super quick look at how this type neutral thing works. All right, come over here. Let's go to our type resolver. So this will take us to our abstract class, all right? Now, back here when we registered metadata, we said when we passed it in, we passed in a WPF type resolver. So what happened here? So we can see that this class is deriving from the registration type resolver. That's our abstract class. And it has a single property here called get platform, I'm sorry, a single method called get platform type, right? All right, so what is it going to do? For every single control that this DLL designs, so if you had, let's say you were providing a design experience for 10 controls, then you would actually have 10 case statements, okay? So when you go look at my grid control in the other project, that's the one I showed you first, that first demo, that's got designed for several controls, and you'll see lots of case statements. But in this project that we're doing here, we're only providing a design experience for a single control, which is the feedback control. Now, we're consuming the rate control, but we're not providing any UI for it or any special stuff. So right here, we just have here, in fact, if you go to the rate control and add it, its value, and you wouldn't get the little pretty screen. All you would get is you have to type 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So right here, in this platform neutral, what we're doing is we're actually returning back the actual type. See, type of CIDR controls feedback. Because we're referencing that project in here, right? So right here, I'm actually passing back a true type. And then, like I always do, if you fall through the case statement, you get the message box so that you realize, oops, I forgot to program something. Okay. All right. Anybody got a question about that? A few moving parts, not too much. This is the hard part, just getting to understand the platform neutrality and all that goes with that. Okay, so we're not going to save anything, get out of full screen here. All right, so now we've registered all of these pieces. So let me take you through a Silverlight registration real quick so you can understand that piece. So right here, here's our Silverlight, corresponding Silverlight file. And again, we have this is our DLL, placed in a well-known location, well-named, and it has a provide metadata attribute on the assembly, and it tells it, hey, I want you to use the register Silverlight metadata type, which is right here, implements IProvide attribute table, and it provides an attribute table, calls the same exact code, except this time it passes in the Silverlight type resolver. Let's take a quick look at that. This is where that assembly that Mark was telling you about is about to get involved. So you can see the code looks exactly the same, doesn't it? Right? Same exact looking code until we get down to where we see in our switch statement. Look what happens here. It's returning a Silverlight type's feedback control type. All right. What this is in the other assembly. So I'll just go ahead and go to definition. This is actually in the other assembly. That's that assembly's controls, our CIDR controls, Silverlight, Visual Studio Design types, right? That's in that lone assembly. And this is all I'm doing. Here, I have a static property here, feedback control type. That's it. I'm just passing back this type. It's a type, feedback control type. So it's passing back this type. And this is how it knows, right here, it's passing this back, this is how it knows what to pass back. So it's actually passing back a real type from here. And this type is going to be used so that when Silverlight loads, so when the Silverlight designer is loading, the right... And it calls for, and it's looking for, a feedback control. We're looking to match types. This is how it'll get it. It'll get an actual Silverlight feedback control. Right here, this little string, it's the same for WPF and Silverlight. It's just, that's the name that it's looking for. We know it's going to be looking for a control called CIDRcontrols.feedback. It's interesting to note here, and you didn't have to namespace. You can see that WPF... and Silverlight are both, their controls are both in the same namespace, can't you? Because if this is platform neutral, they're both that way. And now, and I didn't have to do that, but I did it for simplicity's sake. So if you look at my WPF controls, you go to my rating, here's my feedback control, see its namespace? And I did the same thing for Silverlight right here. Here's my Silverlight control, feedback, and you can see that it's in the same namespace. So that way, it's got the same exact name, so when it comes over here, and it's actually looking for that, it uses this string to know the right name, and it returns back the type, either a Silverlight type or a WPF type. And so that way, the metadata will get loaded correctly and be associated with that control so that at design time, Visual Studio can use it and provide a design experience for the customers or for your customers. All right, so let's go here and let's take a look at a few things. And actually, what I should have done is showed you this. Sorry. I should have showed you this file instead of the other one. I forgot that I'm a VB guy, and C Sharp, I forget, takes you. It doesn't take you to the actual code. It takes you to the compiled piece. So what this is our static here for, and it returns back a type. Feedback control type is equal to a type of CIDR controls feedback. Now, you're going to say, well, CIDR controls feedback, yeah, but this is referencing a Silverlight control assembly. See, that's how it gets away with it. So this is referencing Silverlight. The WPF one was referencing WPF, and through this static here, it gets passed back. And so this way, this is how we're able to differentiate between getting a true Silverlight type and a true WPF type in platform-neutral code. All right? Okay, let's take a look at how we do all this now. Okay, so first thing we're going to look at, we've looked at registration. Let's go take a look at our feedback control, and I guess we'll start with menu actions. So right here, everything's put up in little folders here, and let's go take a look at what does it take to get a menu action going. So this class here is the class that was in the attribute when we registered our metadata, right? All right, so let's talk about, well, what does it take to get something up on the menu. Well, what I did here is I have up here at module level, I have some instances of menu action, and that's the class we're going to use, and that's what we return back to Visual Studio. That's what it needs to get stuff on the menu. And I've got six of them total, right? And I go in and I put them in a little set of, I put them in a list here, and the reason I do that, you'll understand in just a minute. So basically right here, I'm going to go ahead and just set up a menu action. I have to do two things. For my menu, I have to service the update status event. So this right here, this event is going to get called many times. All right, we actually have to listen for this. This is going to get called many times by Visual Studio because it's always going to be asking us, hey, is your menu valid? Because anytime the user right-clicks, it's going to start asking you, hey, is it okay to show the menu? Is it okay to show the menu? And so this is where, down here, we can come down here. And we, right here is where, in this little bit of code, all we're going to do is we're going to go ahead, and every time update item status is called, we're going to make sure of two things. One, do they only have one selected? So if they had multiple ones selected, then my control probably wouldn't work, because I want to let them set value, and I don't want them setting two values at the same time. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to check, is selection count one? And then I want to make sure that they have, that the item that's actually selected is what I want. In other words, this is going to get called by Visual Studio doesn't know exactly what types you could be listening for, so it's going to pass you in a type, and you have to differentiate that. So in this case, what I'm going to do is I'm going to check my primary selection. I'm going to make sure if it's a type of feedback. All right, let's talk about my platform types. So remember, we're inside platform neutral code, and what we want to make sure of is that when the name gets passed in, or the type that gets passed in matches the type we want. So before, what we were showing you was how to be very specific about returning back a Silverlight or a WPF type. Now what we want to do is we're going to show you how to do platform neutral name matching. And so we have this type here. And what it does, what we've done in my platform types is we have a class for each of the controls that we're designing. So if you're designing lots of controls, you'll have lots of classes. And in here, what we're going to do is we're going to provide back a couple things. We're going to provide back a type identifier for each class, and then we're going to provide back a property identifier for each property. The reason we do this is that when you interact with the model with WPF, or when you interact with the WPF or Silver Lake Designer model, the model wants you to pass in type identifiers and also property identifiers. Yes, you can pass in strings, but we all know what happens when you start passing strings around, right? Bugs everywhere, a number of trouble. So if you use property identifiers, and these are all static anyway, they're only going to get created once. Very easy. So it's a little bit of typing to set things up, get everything laid out. But once it's laid out, you have really robust code that's very easy to maintain. So if we look over here, we're going to pass back this type identifier in it here. It's just going to get new up the type identifier, and it's just going to pass this back. These are model, or these are platform neutral identifiers. Even though it's Silverlight, even though it's WPF, these are platform neutral identifiers that the model understands when it's working with both Silverlight and with both WPF. Everybody understand that? Okay. Right, we got that? I'm sure you do. Okay. I know it's difficult. Okay, so we come down here. Whenever our menu status goes to get updated right here, all I'm going to do is I'm going to loop through all these menu actions, turn off their check property, make sure they're all visible, and go look at the model. And now what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask the model. Here's how you ask the model a question. So I'm going to ask the model, our primary selection is a feedback control. I'm going to say, go find a property. What? Go find the value property. Give me its model property object. Now what I can do is I can check if it's not null, and now I can go check its value. And then here, that's how I can set the checked property for if it's, because you saw every time that I brought the menu, the context menu up, the little check changed, and this is how I did it. Very, very simple. And then right here, I make these all invisible if all of this is untrue. So it's very, very simple. That's an entire menu action. So as far as at least getting it on the screen, all right. So now, once it's on the screen, all we're going to do here is add some. We're going to add some event handlers, and here I'm going to just load them up into that into this list. So this way, I can easily address the one I want by index. All right. Now, if we come down here, so how do we get all these menu actions on the menu, Carl? Well, what we want to do is we want to create something called a menu group, and we take each of those menu actions and we stick them inside the menu group, as you can see I've done here. So you have to make sure you set your has drop down property, and then you just go ahead and I just added in all the menu actions into my group, and I pass back my group back to, or I added this group onto my items collection of my class, which is this right here, which is my primary selection context menu provider. It has an items collection, and by adding them into this items collection here, I'm able to, Visual Studio will use this when it displays the menu. All right, really simple stuff here. Now, down here, all these are my event handlers for each one of the menu items that get clicked. Well, once they're clicked, it's easy, right? I'm up here, I'm just going to set my value. I have a single function right here called feedback set value, and all it does is loop through here. Now, let's talk about the model, writing to the model for a second, and I'm going to have to, wow, Mark, our time went fast, didn't it? Yeah, okay, yeah, I feel like for everybody didn't know hardly anything, I was like kind of shocked, you know, like, oh no, we're going to have to go slow. All right, so here, when we have the feedback set value, so we have, when you talk to the model, there's all different kinds of parts and classes inside our model. One's a model property, another one is a editing scope. All right, so when we go to change properties, we change a model property on a particular model item. And what's nice to do is to be able to group a set of changes under one editing scope. And if you do that, when a user uses Control Z or they use their undo button on the toolbar, it undoes everything you just did as a single unit, right? So it makes it really easy to work with that. So what you can do is you need to fire up an editing scope and get it in its begin mode. So you just set begin edit. What you're allowed to do is you're allowed to assign a description. So that way, when you have your undo button at the top, when you click it, you know that usually has a list and it says it's got some text here. Well, the way you set that text is right here. You set the description. And you can see here that I've made it so this whole app is localizable. So all of my strings come out of a string resource. All right. So down here, it's very simple. Remember, just like we did before. So what are we trying to do? We're trying to set a property on the model, so really easy. We come over here, and we're going to find our properties. We do the same thing. Take our model item, find its properties, which one, value. And as long as we can find it, we set it, and then we end the editing scope here. That's complete. If there's a problem, like an exception occurs, first thing we want to do is go ahead and run back a revert. That'll roll it back. And then when you get done, in our finally block, we dispose. So that's a real simple pattern for actually editing the model, for working with our model. Mark's got to do his thing, but sorry we didn't get as much done here, but I want to show you one more thing, and the rest of this will be in our blog, and it'll also be in a write-up I'll have to do now. All right, so what I want to do is I want to show you the category editor, because this is really cool, and then Mark's going to take over. So this is the category editor that we loaded in metadata, which is this piece right here, all right? And it derives from category editor. It's got a few properties, and one of them, the way the category editors work, is Visual Studio is going to be looking for a data template. It needs a data template, and then it's ready to go, all right? So if your editor returns back a data template, it's going to be displayed inside the properties window for you. So in this case, what I've done is I've taken, and I have this class here called Feedback Control Resource Dictionary, and what I've basically done is I've wrapped my resource dictionary in a class, and I'm exposing the actual template in the resource dictionary as a static property here. So this way, if I had 10 data templates in one resource dictionary, I could have a class here that I could expose a type-safe way of exposing a data template without the editor class having to know anything about my resource dictionary or where it's located or anything like that. So that's the reason I did it this way. All right, now if we come over here and we take a look at our resource dictionary, you're not going to believe. Remember, this is the category editor that had all that nice features, and you could do had the property marker in there, and it had a little like a brown shaded area. Then you could, with some controls there, you could work with. I want to show you how much code it took to do that. All right, okay, hold on. Hope you don't need oxygen, but here it is. It's this. This is it. That's it. Oh, wow, that's nothing, Carl. Thank you, Cider. Yeah, this is pretty cool. So these are the four properties that I showed in my category editor. So I had a little grid. This is it, the whole control. I got a grid with some row defs. And this is the Microsoft Windows Design Property Editor dot container. And that's the class that Microsoft gives us. And all I'm doing is I'm setting its position. I set our inline row template, which I'm about to show you, and I set the property that it's going to edit. That's it. So how do you do that, Carl? All right, pretty simple. So for each of these lines has a different static resource, has a different control template, doesn't it? So here's the control templates. I'll show you. They're all the same actually, except for one property. So I could have easily put these in another control, but I didn't want to make it hard for people to understand. So we have a control template for header. And what we're doing here, here's the key to it. See there's data context property? So what it's doing is it's looking up the visual tree to its templated parent, and it's going to find this owning property container. This container has all the information that this template knows how to go find. All right? So we come down here. Because you're going to see down here, we have a really easy. We have a grid, and all I got is a name. I have the label at the top, and below it was the control that edited the property, right? So we have a text block that uses a its label comes out of the strings resource, so I have it localized, and then over here I have my class called Property Marker. See, it's even the same name that I used it, and that's all you have to do. So you're going to put a property marker inside your template. And look, there's no wiring up or anything. See, that's what this data context up here did for you. See how cool Microsoft is? They provided, our team provided something so cool. If you set the data context, this property marker knows how to work. It knows what property it's talking to. It all the code that Ben had written comes for free. This is all you have to do. It's very, very simple, right? It's the power of the extensibility platform that our team is trying to deliver for Visual Studio 2010. All right, down here, then I have a content presenter. Well, what's in here is the editor, right? So if you remember back when we looked at the property grid, and if you looked at the alpha view where it just had all the different, the alpha view had all the editors that were there, well, those editors are actually Visual Studio decides by type what kind of editor goes in there. So right here, we're just allowing Visual Studio to pick the editor. So if you look right here, so my content template, again, we're going back up the visual tree to our template apparent here. And what we're going to find, I'm sorry, this particular one looks at ourself. And what it's going to do, it's looking for our owning property container, which is on our data context. And it's going to use the inline template, the inline editor template, that's predefined by Visual Studio for this particular property. In other words, this is Boilermaker code. You can just copy this and change the one little thing you need. This is the only property that's different right here. This is Boilermaker code. All the hard work's been done for us. You know what's funny? If you look down here, Mark, come on over here and get your laptop fired up. So if you look right here, this is the value template. But you don't see anything here from my control, do you? See this? It's the same one. The reason is because the value, that little value editor, that little guy that you hovered over, that was pre-registered for the value property. So Microsoft, so our platform here, the CIDR platform, knows to go get that and display that. I didn't even have to put that in there. How cool is that? All right. So sorry, this class should have been like 3 hours long. We could have talking you through some more stuff. So what we're going to do is we're going to show you.
How much time have we got left?
5 minutes.
5 minutes. Okay.
So what we're going to do is we're going to show you up on our on my okay. Let's see here. We have I hate this thing. I don't know how to use it.
If go to the slide you want. Go down a little bit.
Yeah, like right here.
Yeah, and then just click on that.
That one?
No, that one.
Oh.
That one. That's it.
Okay. So right here. So the code is going to be uploaded. The code will be uploaded to this thing, which is code, MSDN, Microsoft.com, designer extensibility, and extensibility is slightly misspelled. So the easier way to find it is just WPF designer extensibility. Just use your favorite search engine, and you'll see it. It's right there. It's easy to find. And I'll write all the design. I'll write a VB version of the design time code for the VB developers here. And I'm going to take this whole class and all the stuff you didn't hear from me, and I'll put a blog entry on my blog. Easiest way to find my blog is Carl, K-A-R-L, space WPF, in any search engine, I'm the first entry. So, I'm sorry? I said favorite search engine. Bing, right? Bing, right? I don't know. What do you guys do? Yeah. So whatever you do, you know. And then this slide deck will also have areas, you know, some other pointers to get you guys going. All right, Mark, sorry.
Yeah, that's fine. Thanks very much, Carl. I can't really, there's nothing much I can say after that. So we've just about run out of time. The rest of the slides I've got, I think you can get almost as much information from reading them as you can from me walking through them. I'll make sure we'll either post the slides to the same place there, or I believe there's some place where I'm supposed to give the slides that you guys will get them as a result, through the conference organisers. Are there any questions you guys have in the couple of minutes we've got remaining that you'd like to hear answered? Yes, sir. Will you put comments in the code before
yes.
you upload it? I believe there were lots of comments.
Yeah,
now.
I'm going to spend the next day writing comments.
He's a complete comment.
Yes, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, Nazi, yes.
I'm going to do comments for you.
Any other questions? Yes, sir, at the back. So the question was, can I reuse the WPF Designer's property browser in my own UI? Is that a reasonable summary? The answer is we'd love to find a way to do that. We haven't had a chance to do that in Visual Studio 2010, I'm afraid. So you won't see that in 2010. If we can find a cheap way to do it, we'll do it as soon as we can after that. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
Okay, what I just did, so when you saw that little, whenever we added the value and you saw the little green thing and it moved across, that was a control that I actually put inside the properties window. So you can add a control in there, no problem. There's other ways you can extend the property grid. You can, remember how we used to have in WinForms, you had the little ellipsis button? So you can add an ellipsis button that can open up a whole UI and do it anything you want. There's a couple of different editors. They're called inline editors. So when you go look at the extensibility docs homepage, you'll see different kind of editors. But there'll be inline. You'll see a couple things you can do. And then there's this, I think it's called a complex editor, extended editor. There's another way. And then you saw with the class editor how I just took a data template and dropped a data template right inside the property grid. And Visual Studio automatically just said, oh, I got a data template. That's cool. All right, and then I'll provide the right context in each of the properties, and I'll get you to edit them.
So I want to do this like for every control that's out there. I don't want to add a new property an item in my editor. I want to put something outside of that.
You can't change the form. You can only do it per property.
Only per property. Because you would actually think that maybe I could, right? In other words, if something was down in my registry, something I've got an inline editor that I put down for something, just like, for example, the name property, right, because that's everywhere, I might be able to go out and see what the parents are and then kind of hack it.
We'd strongly advise you to not do that, because we'll break you in our next rev. And that's a breaking change that I won't apologize for.
All right, well, we can point, though.
Yeah. So You can poke, but you have to understand when you start poking outside the bounds of our public API, there's no guarantee that a service pack or a hotfix won't break your editor.
Okay. Yes, sir.
But you'd be amazed at what you can do, yeah.
Any other questions? The gentleman over there.
I'm just wondering, how's the ASP.NET server control experience going to look like in Visual Studio 2010?
I haven't looked at ASP.NET since I learned.
I'm afraid you'd have to find somebody from the ASP team to ask.
Yeah,
it's a long while since we've played in that space.
Yeah. Anybody else got a question? Okay, and you can also, our team members are here. Team members, raise your hand now. Yes. So there's five of our team members that are here. This is the time to go talk to team members. You got 15 minutes before the next class starts. Take advantage of your opportunity. You paid to fly here. You're here. Talk to these people. They actually came here to answer questions and talk with you and hear about what you're building, your experiences. Have a wonderful day. Thanks.
Thanks very much, everybody.
Cool. Nice job, Kyle. Thank you.